The Guardian.
But didn't you sense in these discussions you were having with senior politicians before a general election that a sort of form of pirouette or negotiation was occurring, and they wanted to know how far they had to go?
Making sinister inferences.
No, it's not.
I want to say, Mr. Jay, that I, in 10 years of his power there, never asked Mr. Blair for anything, nor indeed did I receive any favours. And if you want to check that, I think you should call him.
I'm talking to Dan Sabbat, the Guardian's head of media and tech, who's been at the Royal Courts of Justice this morning. Dan, what have you made of Rupert Murdoch's evidence so far?
He doesn't remember very much, that's for sure. You know, what we've seen is, Rupert the amnesiac. Every time anyone has written anything in the past about how he exchanged, you know, power for political favours, he said it didn't happen, or he can't remember the dinner, or it just wasn't true. You know, he's not in. Woodrow Wyatt claims he had an inside track with Margaret Thatcher. Yes, he liked her, but he can't remember doing any deals of the kind that Wyatt outlines around the creation of Sky in the late 80s. There was he can't remember any of the details of a dinner with Tony Blair, as recorded by Andrew Neil. In fact, he can't even remember the dinner at all. Yet, you know, there Blair was sort of, I think, promising light media regulation in the future. He says he just doesn't do that. He doesn't do business that way. He doesn't trade power and influence, endorsement in his newspapers for regulatory favours. Perhaps not, but as Alistair Campbell talked about, it's kind of unspoken understanding that's the way business is done. And that was probably a fair reflection of the reality of the situation, just not one that Rupert Murdoch wants to acknowledge.
And has he also said that his newspapers and his editors operate at arm's length from him? But at one point he said, if politicians want to know what I think, all they need to do is read the editorials in The Sun.
He didn't answer the question very clearly, but he said it had a hands-off relationship with The Times and Sunday Times. We can debate that endlessly, but there's certainly that's not an unfair characterisation. But he did agree that he was more like a traditional proprietor as regards to The Sun. And this is very much in keeping with the evidence we heard yesterday, although from a slightly different context, where they talked about who decided that the Sun was going to back the Tories in 2009, a decision taken by the editor and James Murdoch and Rebecca Brooks and by a whole lot of executives. You know, similarly, Rupert talks a lot about his Euroscepticism and his opposition to Britain joining the single currency. That was something that was pretty much reflected in the pages of The Sun. So, you know, The Sun is his newspaper, his creation. And as he said earlier this year, it is part of me. I don't think that's changed.
You touched on there about when The Sun switched sides from Labour to the Conservatives in 2009. And he also talked about the phone call he received from Gordon Brown in the aftermath of that. And he said it wasn't a 20-minute roar or rant, I think, as Kelvin McKenzie described it, but Gordon Brown did effectively, well, he said, I'm going to declare war on News Corporation. And Rupert Murdoch described Brown's state of mind at that time as unbalanced.
Yeah, that was the most revealing exchange of the morning. There were many, many asides from Rupert Murdoch, but that was the one that really had people sort of surprised by the strength of his remarks. He was talking about a 2009 conversation between himself and Brown after Brown had just learned that the Sun was going to back the Conservative Party. Brown wasn't happy about that. Murdoch claimed he was trying to sort of tone down a previous campus conversation with Mike Kelvin McKenzie, where McKenzie had described Brown roaring at him. But then Murdoch went on to describe Gordon Brown as the Prime Minister of the day as unbalanced, an extraordinarily strong thing to say, and to say that Brown sort of announced that he was declaring war on News Corp, although Murdoch couldn't think how he would do that. That's a very Murdochian assertion, really, which is sort of, you know, not only am I not afraid of anyone, but I'll say what I think about anybody, whether sort of prime minister or potentate or rival sort of media mogul, and I'll do so without really much regard to what they care and think. And maybe it's fair enough to describe Gordon Brown as unbalanced. Other people in the street might do it, but to do so in a public inquiry, that's quite a strong thing to do.
And he was an occasionally contrite Murdoch in the sense that he regretted blocking Chris Batten's book about China. He said he also regretted if they were personal attacks on Neil Kinnock back in the 90s. And also said he wasn't happy with Mackenzie's front page famously in 97 when it said the Sun won it. 1992, I should say. Sorry, Dan, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Occasionally contrite or randomly contrite, I think. He was contrite at the point he hasn't had a chance to talk about phone hacking, but he clearly was wanting to develop an argument about how he didn't pay enough attention to the News of the World and let it sort of spin off in its own merry way and therefore develop this kind of, you know, rogue culture, which no doubt he will denounce more clearly when given the opportunity. So, yeah, it's clear he regrets a few things, says he made a few expensive mistakes, you know, so on and so forth. But to be honest, the overall tone is of Murdoch slowing things down, taking forever to answer questions, at times being sort of quite coherent in control, but taking a sting out of things, at other times being a bit, frankly, rambling and incoherent, and at other times just coming up with a sort of, you know, the cheekiest side, talking about Robert Maxwell as Captain Maxwell, for example, a sort of nice little parting shot, or whoever it may be, you know, just to kind of keep momentum going.
And just finally, Dan, away from Leveson, which is where you've been all morning, of course, but important developments elsewhere with David Cameron standing firmly behind Jeremy Hunt, but also the resignation of Hunt's special advisor, Adam Smith, whom we heard so much about yesterday. And Tom Watson MP cheekily suggested that he may be Hunt's single rogue advisor.
a good line from Tom, although perhaps one to be expected from him. Last night, I think Jeremy Hunt was saying that Adam Smith was a trusted advisor and so forth. After reading this morning's newspapers, which are almost universally condemning him, with the exception perhaps of the Murdoch Times, something had to give. You know, the communications in the end were between, you know, James Murdoch's chief lobbyist, Fred Michel, and Hunt's special advisor, Adam Smith. So I think Smith had little option but to fall on his sword if he was going to have a chance of protecting his boss. Does that work? Well, very strong criticism of Hunt from Labour, but I think we're going to have to now, I think if Hunt is going to go, it's going to have to be shown that that he's misled the House in some way, that his previous public statements don't tally with what we now know. And it will be interesting to see, you know, how it develops over the coming sort of days.
Dan Sabbat, thanks very much.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.